flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Thanks, everybody.
The Bears.
You're listening to the best of the Bears.
He's in for the touchdown, and the Chicago Bears have taken the lead.
A weekly mix of 670 The Score's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Ben made a decision Monday morning.
Monday morning after the Lions lost?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That was the first time we ever ranked the teams. The first time. We weren't ready to do that, and I wouldn't let him do that. The Sunday night after the Lions were defeated by the Commanders was the first time that I was able to finally complete to make Ben a presentation, and his wife, a presentation of all of the information, allow him to ask questions, allow him to be able to make an informed decision. He woke up Monday morning, called me at, I don't know what time it was. It was in the morning and said, you know, call the Bears and see if you can get a deal done.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is really interesting stuff. That is from what is the name of the
Bears
podcast?
The Bears Banter podcast with Bill Zimmerman. That was Rick Smith, who represents Ben Johnson. And he appeared in a 30-minute interview that was as revealing as anything I've heard on the record from an agent ever.
Yeah.
And in the context of what it means to the Bears in their future, it was extraordinary to hear the level of detail about the news cycle that Rick Smith said he was controlling as far back as November. The process and his impressions of the way the Bears were doing their due diligence and finding out what they didn't know about the rest of the league. And also just the way that Ben Johnson really, there were a lot of misconceptions about what he was looking for in this process, in the ways of alignment, front office, you know, roadblocks like existed in Jacksonville.
Right.
And in this particular cut we're about to hear, he talked about how the Bears were willing, basically, to give Ben Johnson whatever he wanted.
They didn't blink on any of this. okay? They didn't blink on the contract negotiation. They didn't blink on the process. They didn't blink on Ben Johnson. I mean, there was no walls put up. There were no impediments you had to walk through. George was well-educated. Kevin did a great job of preparing him before it started of kind of where this is going to go, what the NFL looks like today, both in salary and structure. And I've got all the confidence in the world. And that's, you know, if you want to get into what I, you know, my job in this whole thing, okay, I'm the information gatherer, okay? I'm the guy who has to lead the horse to the water, and then the horse has to drink. So I am on the phone day and night.
I'm sure.
Meetings, talking, vetting, and the Bears allowed me to ask every hard question that you and other fans have been able to ask. It never can ask directly. They allowed me to ask those hard questions, and I wasn't shy. I went down to the core.
Went down to the core. Asked the tough questions of all the Bears brass. It just, given our history of covering Bears coaching searches and knowing that franchise, it sounds like they did not hesitate, Molly. The most remarkable aspect of that is that the asking price was $13 million a year. And it doesn't sound like there was a lot of haggling.
Right.
It doesn't sound like he came in at 15 and they said they met him in the middle.
Define that for me. What does that tell you about how much they wanted him as opposed to him wanting them? I do think he wanted them. That's kind
of it. Sounds like that was what really we didn't know.
No, we didn't know that at all.
We learned, whether it was with our interview on Friday with Ben Johnson, which was terrific, he was great.
Yeah.
Or what we're hearing from Rick Smith behind the scenes and what we heard at the press conference. Ben Johnson identified the Bears as job one, as the place he wanted to be, the destination job, if you will. Maybe he identified that when he was 22 years old and coming to Wrigley Field every year.
Yeah.
Who knows? And he wasn't really clear on when that became the goal. But it was pretty clear in this process, at least, that it was the goal of Ben Johnson, offensive coordinator, would be head coach, when he had every choice he could make. All the teams that had availabilities and openings to choose from, he picked the Bears.
Right. He picked the Bears. But why did they pay him then?
I think because it reflects, and this is the way that we've talked about Kevin Warren, I think, is, you know, he's always spoke and thought in grandiose terms. The rhetoric has always been lofty. The goals have always been outsized sometimes. And we look at that in the context of the stadium project and we think, well, you're going to learn Chicago politics and you can't get done what you want to get done because of this. And you know what? I think we're still probably more right than wrong when it comes to that conversation. But what that, I think, overlooks is that philosophy of swinging for the fences, he took to the coaching search. And I think that is what Rick Smith was trying to articulate, did a good job of expressing. This was because Kevin Warren thought big and convinced George McCaskey it was worth it. That this was going to be a worthwhile investment in somebody that they deem is a special head coach or at least candidate. And you know what? This is the price we have to pay in today's NFL. I think that's what it reflects as much as anything.
Yeah, I think there's that. I also wonder if there is a reflection of a certain amount of desperation to get this coaching search right. In other words, while they were doing the mass search, they were getting hit. There were a lot of stray bullets. There were a lot of insults floating their way. Do they know what they're doing? Why are they doing it this way? And then they come out of it with roughly the top dog, right? I mean, out of this hiring cycle, that would be the young coach that everybody was kind of hoping they would get. We were talking about this idea that the way they had set up this coaching search and the way they had brought back Ryan Poles seemingly was at odds with what the best guy out there, Ben Johnson, wanted. It turns out that wasn't true, that it wasn't all about him getting all the personnel control, et cetera. But it seems like he's got a healthy amount of personnel control.
It seems
like he's not going to be pushed. He won't get a lot of pushback if he has something he likes.
It sounds like they're in philosophic lockstep, and they are aligned in a way that we thought it meant contractual. I think that they're talking about philosophical.
Yes.
And whether that results in Ryan Poles
yes.
getting a contract extension or not is almost like the devil in the details. He may or may not, but it doesn't change the way they're going to approach this job. And I think that's interesting to me. Another thing we learned, let's look at this, the interview process. We were critical of how vast it was, how all-encompassing it was. And I think when we heard Rick Smith explain it, you had a better understanding of maybe what they were looking for.
The extensive interviewing process really is such a great learning experience, okay? When you're that insulated and when you really don't have any idea what's going on in these other buildings, you've got 2 weeks of virtual interviews. Nobody's traveling. There's no logistics. You flip a link on and you start talking. The amount of information, the wealth of knowledge you can learn from talking to all those people is, you can't get it in any other forum in the National Football League but a head coaching interview, literally. And you can get it in free agency too from a player's perspective, but that's a whole different issue, and that's going 100 miles per hour too, and you don't have those interviews with the players. So the coaching side really is that one place. And the Bears did a tremendous job of gathering information, and I'm telling you, a whole lot's come out of that. Ryan and I had a conversation about that the other day and how much they really learned they never thought about. Huh. That they can maybe incorporate a little bit into how they're moving forward.
That's fascinating insight. And also, you talked about, use the word desperation. I think that the Bears faced what they faced reality for maybe one of the few times that we've been able to reference. Rick Smith referred to them as heavily insulated.
Oh, boy.
He's right.
Yeah, but that's hardly a compliment.
It's not a compliment, but I think it's a compliment in the way that they approached that or understood that and faced it head on. Because they were so heavily insulated, maybe they realized that they needed to talk to as many people as possible to find out how they actually should go about building a playoff team or how playoff operations operate and function. It was also a big risk, Molly, because if they did all of that and didn't get Ben Johnson...
Well, see, that's where I'm going.
Where are you?
See, I think that a year ago they refused to talk to Jim Harbaugh. They didn't even take they didn't even take the time to because there was no way they weren't going to keep Matt.
They did not take the initiative.
And they took no initiative, and then they hired the wrong offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. And I think that they came into this process and identified the guy that they wanted, and then all the rumors are out there that he doesn't want them and that his he wants to control personnel and all this stuff. Then they have this conversation with him via whatever I guess it was a Zoom call.
It was a Zoom call, yes, yeah. Yes.
So they talk to him on Zoom and they understand that that he wants the job and he's willing to take it. Then they have a decision to make. Are we willing to pay for the guy to get him? And you heard Kevin Warren talk about how he's fiscally conservative, but he also believes that you get what you pay for and that you've got to be able. I mean, you heard him in the
Let me just say that. Yep. That's a great reference point because he did say that again, and he said it several times. And there's nothing that we have seen in Kevin Warren's 2 years on the job to make me believe that he's fiscally conservative about anything. Because, if he were fiscally conservative, he would not be wasting the time and money, and that's his terms, time is money, on the stadium project. But
in fairness to him, he did put, by pursuing the city, I'm not saying he did it on purpose.
Fair enough.
He did solve that crisis of tax issue.
In Arlington Heights. Okay,
which may be where they end up.
I think I just chuckled when he said that because you're talking about a guy that just paid $13 million to a guy who's never been a head coach before.
Right, exactly.
And made him the seventh highest coach in the league.
But my point is simply that they almost had to pay him and get him so they didn't look foolish to the actual Bear fan.
Roll the dice. It was a roll of the dice, a big gamble, and it paid off. So we're talking about in these terms. Last thing about, you mentioned the news cycle, you mentioned the manipulation. I thought it was interesting. We all thought that the Raiders were in play because of Tom Brady, because of they fired the general manager.
He's doing the game and saying nice things about
exactly
the guy.
The
they're cheating.
The conflict of interest that we went crazy about. But what happened was, Ben Johnson was out after the Raiders after this, and Rick Smith addressed that.
Initial gut reaction day one on the Raiders was no go, okay? Tom Brady absolutely has an extremely compelling case.
Okay.
That gets you to listen. The whole thing, Ben to the Raiders, you know, great sources, all the other stuff, nah, that was never right. However, sometimes, again, going back to my job, sometimes things go viral that you're like, I got to put a brake on this. And sometimes thing goes viral like no, this is good. I like this. Hmm. And that viral thing was, I like this. Let's just leave that out there.
That's how you get $13 million.
That's how you get $13 million. You let somebody else be wrong. And you build a market.
He was nice about Tom, but he did everything but insult the owner's haircut, which everyone does.
It was something else. That's about really how the Raiders amazing. Stuff was overstated, inaccurate, however you want to describe it. Bottom line is, Rick Smith was revealing in that podcast, the Bears Banter podcast, and everything fell in place perfectly for the Bears organization.
Can I be greedy?
Yes, you can.
Give me something up top against a rookie.
That being Kalen Carson?
That's exactly right.
Saints break the huddle. Carson is on the far side, has Shaheed in front of him. Under center is Carr. Play action to Jamal Williams. He's looking deep, and he's throwing deep, and he's throwing for Shaheed. Shaheed makes the catch. 10, 5, Goose. See you later. 5. No flags. 70 yards. You can be greedy, my friend, because it makes for a great touchdown.
Oh, man, I love this game.
Go ahead and get greedy. Why not? Deuce McAllister. That was Saints Radio, by the way. I don't need to tell you. He is on Twitter at DMcAllister26. The Saints Radio Network analyst is with us on the Score Hotline. That's presented by Circa Resort and Casino, CircaLasVegas.com. Deuce, how you been?
Doing well. How are you guys doing?
I think we're in a lot better position now that we have a head coach here in Chicago that a lot of teams were after, and that coaching staff is starting to get filled out a little bit.
Yeah, your coaching staff, impressive group of guys, and obviously, you know, it starts with the head coach and some of the things that he's been able to do, and, you know, the hope, the goal is to replicate it and get some wins up there in Chicago and, you know, get that Bears team back to where it's probably been for many years, and that's, you know, in the playoffs.
So give us the scouting report, the positives and negatives of Dennis Allen as it regards his current role of defensive coordinator.
Really, really good coach, really smart coach, and I can tell you guys will see it. First day of camp, whether it's mini camp or training camp, those defensive guys, they're going to do up-downs. Anytime a new player is signed, they're going to do up-downs. As soon as those guys go to individual drills, as far as offense and defense, they will do up-downs. And so for me, knowing DA and over the plus 20 years, because DA, not only was he a assistant under Sean Payton, and obviously we know the head coach for the Saints, but even being the defensive coordinator, he was assistant defensive back coach. And so I know you guys have, I think it's Al Harris from the Cowboys, who is tremendous as well. Declan Doyle, you also have JT Barrett, a couple of guys on that staff, and they've done a good job, Coach Johnson has, of assembling that staff. But from a defensive standpoint, you will have an aggressive defensive coach. You know, it's in his DNA to be a guy that likes to play man-to-man. He will adjust to what he has as far as defense is concerned, but in his DNA, he is an aggressive defensive coach. Press man is what he loves. You know, they will play a lot of...
Oh, no. The Cylons got...
I hope we did not lose Deuce McAllister.
Oh, no. The Deuce got loose.
That is definitely what happened.
Yep. We will get him back.
I can't believe the Deuce got loose.
It happens. They'll grab him. So if he plays press man, I'm telling you, this is going to be one of these cases where don't think Tyreek Stevenson is out the door quite yet.
I already didn't think Tyreek Stevenson is out the door. He's too valuable to let him go.
All right, we got him back. You're saying that Dennis Allen prefers press man as his 4-3 defensive backfield arrangement.
and is, you know, probably his DNA. He's going to be a guy that likes to get after a quarterback, will get you some exotic pressures. He's going to kind of his defense will be based off of what he has from a personnel standpoint. And so, you know, you will get some nickel coverage. Likes to play big nickel, and whether that's with the third safety, a lot of that will depend on what personnel that he has available. I don't know Chicago's personnel as well, so I couldn't really tell you. But it's going to be exotic looks, and it's going to be to get after the quarterback.
Well, we could use the getting after the quarterback part. Certainly here, the defensive line did not come up big really the last couple of seasons, although Montez Sweat, the addition of him, helped a little bit for a time, but he was hurt for a lot of this past season. Deuce, if you're looking at the Bears and this transformation that's about to take place with Dennis Allen, what's the biggest weakness when you look at his time in New Orleans from your vantage point?
The Saints defense was best when they could play with 7.5 in the box. And so basically that's having a corner that can be physical, but he's really not a corner, nickel corner. He's really almost like a safety. If you don't have that now I have to commit another guy in that box, you know, because DA likes to play two safety high. Now he will walk that other safety down into the box, but that's not what he wants to do. He wants to play nickel. He wants to be able to go have linebackers that can run side to side and be able to plug and play, but he also wants to have that nickel linebacker that can fill the hole and be able to make tackles. And so you've got to have at least one defensive tackle that is willing to do the dirty work, and then the other, that three technique guy, he has to be able to get after the passer. And if he doesn't have that, you better have you at least a boy dog at one defensive end spot that can rush the quarterback on his own.
Why did he fail as a head coach, DA?
Multiple reasons. I think, you know, when you look at it, injuries played a part in that role, and then not being able to really get the most out of some of the players that you were banking on. The Saints couldn't afford to lose a couple of guys. One was your center when you lost him for an extended period of time. And then the other part of it was, you know, I don't think guys were accountable enough for some of the mistakes that they were making. And I don't want to say DA wasn't tough enough on them, but I would have loved for him to be a little bit more tougher. I mean, I think that I love him as a person. I love him as a coach. But I think some guys took advantage of him as far as, hey, you know, not that I'm not accountable, but too many guys didn't do what they needed to do. And, you know, DA could have came down a lot harder on him.
Well, that's a little bit concerning, mm-hmm. because we've had some accountability issues, we'll say. I know you saw, as the world saw, the Phil Mary play against the Washington Commanders. And that's one of those things that did not get, quote-unquote, nipped in the bud, if you will. When you talk about his personality, how would you describe him from a personality standpoint, Dennis Allen?
Yeah, now, look, when I say that now, don't think that he won't sit, and I know what you're talking about. Don't think that he won't sit him down, you know, and it's going to be above Dennis, even as a head coach, even the general manager. Hey, we're going to suspend you, you know, for a game. We're going to suspend you for multiple games. If something like that has to happen, it has to happen. And so from that standpoint, he's not afraid to do that. I mean, so don't get me wrong when I say that, but from a personality standpoint, the players will love him. Because he is a player's coach, but he is demanding as well. You've got to still go out there and do your job. It's not like he's not going to teach. He's going to be one that teaches the game. But also, if you could be talented, but if you don't know what you're doing, he's going to give you a couple of chances. But if you can't get it done, then he's going to go with maybe somebody that is not as talented but can do the job like it needs to be done.
When you watch Saquon Barkley, what do you see? Does he remind you of anybody? Is there a comp right now for the kind of football that he's playing? And it just from one successful running back to another.
I love how he's playing. I mean, you know, he is playing like a back that wants to get even an extension, even though he just signed a new deal with the Eagles. And, you know, a lot of that as well. The offensive line does a great job. But Saquon, I tell you, you know, he still has to break some tackles. One of the things that you see him doing a lot is getting to the second and third level. And once he's to the second and third level, those DBs don't want to tackle him. And then I think, you know, his size surprises a lot of guys because he's a heavier back. I mean, Saquon goes easy 225, but he's still running 4.4. And so, you know, being that big, being that heavy, and outrunning guys, it surprises some teams. And so getting to the second and third level, he's giving you the home run threat, and then his ability to be able to catch it out of the backfield, it makes it really tough for defenses to say, all right, we're going to put Aiden in the box. If you're doing that, then now I'm leaving Smitty and I'm leaving A.J. Brown one-on-one situations. And so they've done a good job of being able to scheme and do, you know, be able to get him in space with some duo runs. And you see some of the toss cracks that they're running. Mm-hmm. That's what that first play was where he scored. I mean, and they're doing a good job of getting him in space.
Declan Doyle, I know he was there as an offensive assistant. How much familiarity, if any, do you have with what he was doing? And are you surprised to see him at 28 years old become an offensive coordinator?
Nah, not at all. I mean, Declan was with us for 4 years, and you know, he's a grinder. Guy that's going to go in there, break down film, can relate to players, understands the college game, which is translating and transitioning into the NFL game, and I think that will help Caleb a lot. I mean, so some of the looks that you see in college will be able to transfer over to what they do in Chicago. And I think, you know, with Ben's creativity as far as, hey, let's get him multiple answers to the test where, you know, if something pops up, he has something that he's comfortable with going to. And so Declan won't call the plays. It'll still be Ben's responsibility. But just to have some different eyes, he comes from, obviously, you know, Sean's system, Coach Sean Payton's system. That's a little bit different from Ben. And so now it's marrying some different ideas and being able to get the quarterback multiple answers to the test.
All right, Joe Brady has pulled out of the Derby to be Saints head coach. The numbers appear to be dwindling, and it looks like the Saints are at the end of, pick a metaphor here, whether it's
musical chairs
or hot potato or some variation there. In who do you want them to hire?
They don't pay me enough to give. I have my opinions.
That's why I asked. That staff,
yeah, I know that staff well. From what I see, I'm not a fan of a first year coach. I don't have an opinion whether it's an offensive guy or a defensive guy. They've got to be able to have the authority that you need as far as to respect from the locker room. Can they garner the respect from the locker room? Can I go in there and guys respect me? That's one of the things that you definitely need from a head coach. And then the other piece is, you know, being willing to be creative, because over the next couple of years, from a salary cap standpoint, you're going to have to be creative to kind of keep yourself in games, or just because you're going to have to depend on maybe some younger guys, or hoping that injuries don't hit you kind of like they did this year. And so there's a couple of guys out there that they're still in on. They're in the final phases of picking a guy. And yes, Joe did pull out as far as the conversation to have a second interview, but I think they're still in pretty good position. That's the last job of 32 available. They're still in pretty good position to get a guy that they think can lead the charge for him.
So you're not a big fan of first year head coaches. Did I get that right?
Not for this situation. Not for this.
Is that because
team
you
right
have
here,
like the veteran quarterback in Derek Carr with a couple more years on his contract, and you feel like they're set up to do more now with maybe a veteran? Like here, I'll tell you, here in Chicago, there's a lot of discussion about Mike McCarthy, who was the first person who was brought in person to interview. And the whole thing was, hey, we know he has a certain floor that comes with him because he had the three straight 12-win seasons in Dallas, the Super Bowl success with the Packers, worked well with young quarterbacks in the past. Aaron Rodgers comes to mind. And so I'm wondering, my partner here, Dan, believes that he's a great fit for New Orleans because of all of these things.
I just think it sounds like these roads are leading towards Mike McCarthy, whether you like it or not.
Well, I like Kellen Moore. I like Weaver. I do like both of those guys, and you know, both of those guys would be first time coaches as far as head coaches are concerned. I don't have a problem with either one of them, you know, but when you start weighing it, and not necessarily just from a quarterback standpoint, the Saints are going to have to slash some salary. You know, they've got to get salary cap compliant in a couple of weeks here. So normally when you do that, I'm going to be depending on either one year veteran contracts, cheap guys that are trying to come in and prove it, or I've got to depend on some rookies. And so now I'm in a development phase. And so for this team here, that's what they're looking at. That's what the Saints will be looking at least for the next year or two. And so I've got to be able to get a coach that can connect with players, maybe possibly young players, or from a standpoint, a mercenary guy that, hey, I got 1 year, I'm trying to get paid, I'm in a prove-it deal. Can that coach connect with them? Your situation is probably a little bit different, where I'm good with swinging for the fence. The Saints were not getting Ben Johnson. Ben right. Johnson had his choices of jobs last year. He turned them down. So for Ben, what young quarterback can I go with? I can grow with. I know I have a couple of years. We if it's success next year, great. But, you know, it's really a three-year plan is what you have in Chicago. I don't know if the Saints – well, I know the Saints aren't in that same situation. Not that they're going to get rid of a coach in 2 to 3 years, but we don't necessarily have that first-rounder, number one overall pick in the saddle. I mean, we've got Derek, and then you've got some young guys at quarterbacks, but – even that is kind of, hey, is this going to be the long-term answer? I can't say that. I don't know that answer right now for the Saints.
I know Dan Ruscha is an O-line coach candidate for the Bears. He's the current Tulane O-line coach, was in a bunch of roles for the Saints staff for about a decade. I'm just curious your thoughts on him.
It would be outstanding. Dan, he's a teacher. He's a teacher, and so, you know, he can run the gap scheme. He can run his own scheme. He's an NFL coach. Yes, he's done a good job at Tulane. I don't want to say he didn't want to leave New Orleans, but probably didn't really want to leave New Orleans. That's why he took that job at Tulane. He would be a really, really good coach. I mean, he's coached tight ends. He's coached offensive line, but he's really an offensive line guy. But he is a guy that can communicate well with your guys. The backs will love him as well because he's going to talk to them as well. And so you got a really good understanding of what you're doing from a system. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to have success because you still got to go out there and run it. You got to go out there and prove it on the field. But he's really a technique guy. He's a technician as far as teaching, and you're going to run gap end zone schemes with him.
He was around here as well because he was an offensive coordinator at Northern Illinois, was an offensive coordinator at Illinois.
So he's got some Chicago area ties.
I should have known he was at Tulane. I had no idea. I probably should have known
that. Dan's son is currently attending Tulane, Deuce.
Somebody should have given me a heads up on that and been like, hey, you know, look at this guy.
Deuce, what I want to ask you is because we've seen with the year that Derrick Henry had, with the year that Saquon Barkley had, a guy that a lot of teams could have had for not as much money as most of these teams are paying their second and sometimes even third wide receivers. Do you feel like there is going to be a reckoning with the success of these running games, or is this just a flash in the pan in your eyes? I know you, as a former running back, probably feel some type of way that for a time, and you could argue even now, running backs are being undervalued, at least the elite ones.
Pay the backs. Pay them. I'm always up here running. Pay the back. But no, I agree with you. I mean, the elite guys, they're probably five, if you're being honest. There's probably five guys that, and I don't want to call them just three-down guys, but they're three-down guys. And so those guys should be at that 15 to 17, probably even more, depending on what you have at your quarterback. I mean, if you've got a veteran that a quarterback, he can win the game on his own, then no, I'm probably not going to pay that back $17 million a year. But if I've got to lean on that back.
I think the Deuce got loose again. So we'll thank him very much for joining us. Deuce McAllister, the former 1,000-yarder and Saints current radio analyst.
And probably begrudgingly University of Mississippi graduate. We'll throw that in there as well.
You said that. I didn't.
Report with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Brad Biggs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend. And he joins us on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. Big Zay.
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you want to start with the hiring of Bill Johnson? I've got a good friend named Bill Johnson. I just wonder what it means to you. What role is he exactly going to fulfill? Is he a defensive assistant? Is he the defensive line coach, or more of a, do they need more help than just Bill at the defensive line?
I don't believe he's going to be the D-line coach, but certainly appears like the Bears are going to wait till they have the whole thing buttoned up, or most of it anyway, before they sort of pull back the curtain on this. But yeah, Bill Johnson, I think is going to be a sort of a senior defensive assistant. Don't believe he'll be in charge of the D-line as it is. Does have experience working with Dennis Allen previously.
We heard from Dennis Allen yesterday. We heard from Declan Doyle yesterday. Brad, what was your impression? Let's start with Dennis Allen, the biggest takeaway.
Yeah, Dennis Allen's a guy that comes with a ton of experience, right? He's seen pretty much everything offenses are going to throw at you. I think, you got the feeling that he's got a decent idea of what they've got on the roster right now, because he had time out, right? The Saints fired him, I think, in early November, mid-November. So he's been able to kind of plot his next move a little bit, had some success a couple years there in New Orleans where they had a highly ranked defense when they had some really good players. Like, it's like anything else, the best defensive coordinators usually have a lot of the best players. So we'll see how his role might impact a little bit of roster decisions moving forward, kind of what he's looking for. But he likes some of the pieces in the secondary, which sounds an awful lot like what Ben Johnson said when he was introduced last week.
Yeah, it was interesting because Ben Johnson said that he didn't know him very well and they'd only kind of gotten together recently. And when you heard from Dennis Allen, he basically talked about his relationship with Dan Campbell and with Aaron Glenn, and how they all played together over various years at Texas A&M, and then they all coached together under Sean Payton with the Saints. And then he said that he relied on their input about Ben Johnson, and Ben relied on their input about him, and the two of them decided it would be a good fit, basically through the mutual friends that they have. Obviously, you're going to need to have a defensive coordinator when you go into that meeting as a head coach who's your defensive guy. And he had already, they'd made contact at the end of the season. And so when the hiring season starts during the playoffs, there is Ben Johnson able to drop the name of Dennis Allen as his defensive guy.
Right, and that's what coaches, they have to have a list of names. Hey, I am connected with these guys. I believe I can get these guys to come join me and work with me. How do you feel about these names? Like, you're kind of bouncing them off the people that you're interviewing with, and obviously Dennis Allen was a name that I'm sure the Bears were happy to have him included on that list.
So, Brad, Declan Doyle also met the media, made his first impression. Curious what you thought of that, but also what Sean Payton had to say to you. It's in ChicagoTribune.com this morning about why Declan Doyle was such a hot commodity.
Yeah, Sean was interesting because he kind of stressed that he was really intelligent for a young coach, but also had the ability to interact well with people on the staff, I think implying that sometimes you get these guys who are super football geniuses and they don't know how to get along with everybody. But Declan was able to pull that off. He said for a young coach, he had a knack for knowing when to speak up and maybe when not to interject, which is probably important in a large setting when you got a bunch of football coaches that have been doing it for an awful long time. And then he talked about, attention to detail and how Declan would
kind of have some just short notes for him that he would leave on his desk at various times. And he's like, you know, the stuff was good. So he leaned into some of what Declan Doyle was producing for him in New Orleans. And that's why when he had the opportunity in Denver, Sean Payton gave him a position to coach for the first time tight ends.
Why was Richard Hightower retained?
Well, they got better during the second half of the season. You know, I think that's the, and they, you saw young players develop on special teams. So I think that was something that they liked the idea of having a guy on staff that was familiar and comfortable with the roster and could maybe educate some of the new coaches. Okay, this guy, you know, good at this. This guy learns this way. You know, a lot of different things Richard can provide, not only Ben Johnson, but other coaches on the staff.
All right, Brad, so you were in Mobile for a couple of days talking to other executives, and I know we're more than a month away from free agency, but you do have an enticing item, and you talked to some people about whether Trey Smith, who once was thought to be a guy, the Chiefs guard, that would not get to free agency, they would not let him do that, might become more available, might be on the open market, and if he is, obviously he becomes somebody the Bears would be very interested in.
Yeah, I think the Bears and a lot of teams would have considerable interest in Trey Smith. Kansas City's got a really good problem to have. They've got a host of young players that need to be paid and might not be able to get it done with all of them. It's still possible. No one's sure which way this thing's going to go. You know, I talked to one GM, and he's like, yeah, it's possible he could get to the market. He said that the $20 million guard scares some teams. Like, some teams don't want to go that high for an interior offensive lineman. And you can understand why. If Trey Smith makes it to market, you're talking about a guy at the top of his game, entering the prime of his career with a clean injury history. You're going to have no shortage of teams with a lot of cap space interested in talking to him. Like, this, you know, it's really easy to play connect the dots between the Bears and Trey Smith if indeed he gets to free agency. There's going to be other teams that are going to be in the mix there for him. And one thing to keep in mind is the Chiefs weren't particularly driven to keep cornerback Aldarius Sneed at last March, and they executed a tag and trade with him. Used the franchise tag on him, and then came up with a trade with the Tennessee Titans that involved a third-round pick in this year's draft, I believe, and I think they swapped seventh-round picks as well. But in that scenario, the Chiefs could have some control over where Trey Smith was to go if indeed he's not in their future.
Did you see any talent down there, Brad? You know, was there anybody, especially among the offensive linemen, maybe that's an area of need where you believe there are, you know, some hidden gems?
Yeah, there was, a lot of interesting players there, especially some offensive linemen. I don't know that there were, there wasn't a tackle that you're looking at and saying, oh, boy, this guy's going to be gone in the first five or six picks. One guy who jumped out immediately was Gray Zabel in North Dakota State. Left tackle in college. A lot of people think he's going to wind up being a guard in the NFL. He played all three spots this week in Mobile. He was lined up at center as well. I talked to him about that. He said he snapped the first couple years in high school, and then or the last couple years in high school, and then he was like sort of their emergency long snapper at the start of his college career, and he said snapping the football is sort of like riding a bicycle. Real sturdy, powerful. I thought it was a pretty good group overall. Belton, a left tackle out of NC State, I think is had a nice week there. We'll see how the game goes. But there were a bunch of guys. Again, not that slam dunk guy that is going to go at the top of the draft, but there's some depth, and there's some depth at some key positions, offensive line, running back, tight end. And I think when you talk about what the Bears need to do offensively, they're probably going to require some help in all of those positions. And with the draft having depth, that's a good thing for Ryan Poles and his staff.
Tulane coach, offensive line coach Dan Rashard expected to interview with the Bears today. Brad, we've talked about him in the past. His name keeps coming up. We know that they also spoke to Justin Fry, the Ohio State offensive line coach. As this as staff kind of comes together, is there a pecking order? Do you think that they're leaning one way or another?
The only reason I'd give Rochard maybe a slight edge here is the fact that he's got the link to the Saints. He spent a decade coaching in New Orleans, and we've seen how the background of a handful of these hires that have been made have come from that place as well. So you know that Dan Campbell's kind of giving references for some of these guys that he spent a lot of time with for Ben Johnson. And so that combined with the Saints had a really good offensive line for a run there while Dan was in charge of that group, you would think he's an attractive candidate for that reason. Is anybody ahead of another? I'd only be guessing at that. And, you'd think by this time next week they'll have probably most of these wrapped up. And who knows, man? I mean, they could get a handful of them done between now and Monday.
What was the general consensus down there regarding the Super Bowl? Did you talk to any people just in passing? And there's so many executives down there.
Yeah, I talked to some people. Had a couple conversations about it yesterday as well. You've got the Chiefs have got the best coach, right? Mm-hmm. And they've got the best quarterback. That being said, I think people give an awful lot of credit to Vic Fangio and what he's been able to do and accomplish. So I think it's going to be an interesting game. I hope it's entertaining, right? But the huge stage for Vic Fangio, who's just been an incredible addition to the Eagles. You look at what happened in Miami last year when he was there, and things didn't go great, and it got to the end of the year, and you had some Dolphins players that seemed disgruntled with Vic, and he couldn't connect with the players. Well, it looks like he's connected pretty darn well with them in Philadelphia. Maybe they weren't the right kind of players for Vic in Miami. Maybe that was part of the issue.
Brad, let's go back to what Dennis Allen had to say, and I think it's interesting. I don't know how unusual it is. It probably is just the way things are done in the NFL coaching circles. He referenced Ben Johnson contacting him well before the end of the season when Dennis Allen was unemployed after being fired by the Saints, and basically agreeing to or looking at an alignment there. I don't know if it was specific to the Bears or Chicago, this job, or just in general. Were they going to be aligned regardless of where Ben Johnson went, or was he talking to him specifically about the Bears' opportunity because of the way Dennis Allen referenced the pieces that are already here?
I think they were probably talking in general, right? It's going to be difficult for a head coaching candidate to have a unique list of guys for multiple interviews. You know, and Ben Johnson's the guy who was interviewing with different places. Well, I got Ben I got Dennis Allen if I go to the Bears, and I've got so-and-so if I go, over here. I saw some people have made a lot of this, that it's crazy that this kind of thing would happen during the season. This isn't an interview that Ben Johnson had of Dennis Allen to explore their compatibility and desire to work with one another. This is like, hey, I'm going to have some interviews coming up. Are you open to the idea of going with me if I get a job? They probably have a real brief phone conversation, and that's that. I'm not privy to the conversation. I guess it went something like that. Because when these guys put together their lists, you know, I'll be honest with you guys. I've had a guy connected with a coach that was getting head coaching interviews here in the past call me, say, hey, do you know what this coach is going on, has got going on? And I said, well, he's looking. And he's like, do you think he would go with this coach? And I said, I'll tell you what, I'll send you his phone number. You guys can figure it out. Like these things are loosely and quickly put together. So I don't think there's anything nefarious for the Lions season and the end of it to Ben Jansen connecting with Dennis Allen.
Brad, when an offensive guy comes into an interview, he's asked, who's your defensive guy?
Oh, yeah,
so
he's got to have him.
He
yeah.
makes an arrangement. Hey, do you mind if I drop your name? I was told by a group of looking for a coach that the same defensive guy was mentioned by two different coaches. So, like, will I work with you? Oh, yeah. Will I work with you?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I know guys that try to get on multiple lists too because the thing spins so quickly that you just don't know. And if you're only on the list of one or two guys and they don't get jobs, well, guess what? There's a good chance you're not going to have a job.
Brad, when you pass along your number, do you get a commission on that if a guy gets a job?
No, I
just wonder if you connect the two, you're kind of brokering a deal.
No, he's doing a favor, and then he will come back and ask for that favor return. Ah. It's like a Godfather scenario.
Yeah. Okay,
with Big Z in the NFL.
Just wondering, how that works. Looking out for you, Brad.
All right.
What? How quickly will this be resolved? Do you think it'll be resolved next week? We'll know what the coaching staff looks like, and then
I think they'll be close. Yeah. I've seen these things in the past where you're 2 weeks in and you think it's all done, and then you get a list from the team. Oh, they got these three other positions I didn't know they were even going to have.
Right.
Look at these, But they're the big ones now. It's the O-line coach, the D-line coach, and and then they've got to get together and take the appropriate time to do a review of the roster in place before they then try to quickly get up to speed for free agency.
And you really don't get rid of guys until you have to. Yeah.
Yeah, and the personnel staff's already probably prepared for these free agency meetings. Like, they've been gearing up for that all along. But the coaches are going to play a role in that. And certainly if you've got players that are going to be free agents that have had experiences with coaches that you now have in the building, you're going to compare notes on that. And you're right. You don't get rid of players that you're potentially going to unload until you have to. The Bears will make some cuts here at some point. When, I don't know. But it's going to be interesting. I mean, they've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
They seem to be upbeat about it, and it'll be interesting.
Good stuff, Brad.
Great stuff, Brad. Thank you, buddy.
Have a good weekend.
Have a great weekend, guys.
The stumble bum play that you hit the Bears with.
Did you like that one?
It was clever.
Right now, Jason Leisure, Dan Wiederer, they're just sharpening knives.
Jason Leisure.
We're just hanging out trying to figure out who's the next person that the Bears are going to interview.
Who's not? What about this? What if we tried John Voight? And I know that he only played Coach Bud Kilmer in the movie, but he seems like that kind of Brian Flores-type disciplinarian. Like, he's going to come in and clean things up.
You think you don't have to listen to me? Your daddy was a no-talent, but at least he listened.
There's reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times.
Jason Leisure with the Chicago Sun-Times. I'd read interviews that you did where you talked about being very selective about jobs, looking for a place that would set you up to succeed. And my question is, how much of a factor was your belief in Caleb, your assessment of him, and what's your starting point for how you're going to coach him to play the position?
We're ripping this thing down to the studs, and we're going to build it up with him first and foremost, and then with the pieces around him next. I really look forward to challenging him and pushing him, as I said before, to continue to grow and develop.
Jason Leisure with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Hell yeah, we love talking with Jason Leisure. He covers the Bears for the Sun-Times. He is a frequent contributor to our show, and we appreciate him for it. And now he joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Mr. Leisure, before we get into foolishness and talk about the Super Bowl, there are a couple of serious like Bears things that I wanted to get your opinion on. First things first, for me at least, what do you think of the Dennis Allen hire? What does it signify to you?
Well, it signifies more than anything to me the goal to get experience on the staff, and I think that's good. But what's more important than experience to me is that they have cohesion. And I'm very curious to see how that's going to go with Ben Johnson and Dennis Allen, because they have no history whatsoever. You can see that by looking at their Wikipedia pages where it lists out their resume that they've never coached together. But even asking Ben Johnson about it a week ago when they introduced him, he said he had no connection. I think he even said he hadn't met him, but he just likes what Dennis Allen does from afar.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dennis Allen is a terrific defensive coordinator, schematically, and the way that he attacks, and his record is such. He dominated Tom Brady as a defensive coordinator, and even as a head coach in New Orleans, his defense was good against Brady. But your point is an interesting one. I was told that it's the Dan Campbell relationship, that Campbell was down there in New Orleans a lot with Dennis Allen, and that and that the recommendation for Ben and for Dennis comes that way. But they don't like.
That's right. Ben did say that last week. You're right.
Mm-hmm. So, but it's interesting that he's got three coordinators that he's never physically worked with. That is interesting. Of the three of them, is there one that gives you pause the most in that regard?
I mean, Declan Doyle does, because you just don't know hardly anything about him. He's 28. He doesn't have much of a track record. I mean, that's always a thing for me, is am I basing how I think you'll do off some hope and some faith and some projection, or is there a track record that shows me what you're going to do in that job? And it was a really interesting choice. When you asked the exact question, Matt, of, you know, does it give me pause? And that's a perfect way to say it. It gives me a little bit of pause. It's not an immediate, you know, green light on that, but it's not an immediate red light either. We're going to have to see how that one goes. I would have liked the idea, and this is up to Ben Johnson. He's got to choose what he's comfortable with, but I would have liked the idea of an older coach who's almost into retirement, like Mike Martz type, but a little bit younger. Not actually retired, to just be kind of a good sounding board and mentor and guide for you.
But isn't Dennis Allen kind of that?
I think so.
Even though he's on
defensive coordinator. I mean, as an offensive coach.
I'm not even worried about this guy who's 28 years old, because he's there to run practice. And if it doesn't go right, they'll fix that.
You remember that moment in the press conference last week when somebody, it might have been you, asked him about the profile for offensive coordinator, like who that is. And he said somebody, he described it, and with the last thing he said, with a little gleam in his eyes, somebody who doesn't mind late nights.
Yeah.
Because you got to
be young and single.
Damn right. And I don't know if Declan Doyle's single, but I know at 28,
I don't know either,
he's going to be super thankful to have this job, and he will work as late as Ben tells him to work. And that's a big part of the gig.
I love the idea that this could be, Declan Doyle could be an up-and-comer. He could be this guy that Ben Johnson has always kind of had his eye on as a rising star in coaching. And I mean, it would be a big change if the Bears suddenly have these assistants that everybody wants, because it's usually the other way around for the Bears. They're usually giving jobs to guys that will never get those jobs again, that will never be qualified or deemed ready or fit for one of those jobs by another team ever again. They have people leave that don't ever get back to that same position. So, you know, maybe Declan Doyle is an up-and-comer who is going to be a great partner for Ben Johnson and, you know, coach his way out of here in a good way in a couple of years.
Jason, how do you see Ben Johnson's relationship with Caleb Williams evolving?
Well, I love it because, one, it is obviously there you have the coach, head coach quarterback connection that the Bears have so rarely, if ever, had in the modern era. But two, I think it's a good thing for Caleb Williams that Ben Johnson is younger. Ben Johnson is not that far out of Caleb Williams' age range. So I think that makes it very relatable. Ben Johnson obviously played the position. And I thought it's such a good approach if Ben Johnson is actually going to hold to this. Because everything he says sounds good. We have to wait and see what he does to make some determinations on things. But if Ben Johnson is truly going to start over with the playbook and build it from scratch with Caleb Williams in mind and his strengths at the center of that, I think that's a great approach. I think it's such a better approach than, oh, we're getting the guy that's going to bring us the Lions offense, or we're getting the guy that's going to bring us the Chiefs offense, or we're getting the guy that's going to bring us, you know, Oregon's offense or whatever.
Yeah, man, I couldn't agree more. I think that's one of the greatest things he said. It's one of the greatest perspectives, if that's really how it's going to be. And it needs to be. It's just so intuitive. And then what that playbook ends up looking like is a pretty fascinating thing to think about. Jason, we played some of Ben's agent, Rick Smith, today. It was on the midday show.
He's been everywhere.
It's fascinating that he's been out there and been giving you some stuff that was key in the negotiation and in the agreement. And Ben's voice and Ben's vision is going to be principal in the relationship with Poles and in the relationship in the building, and that he specifically referred to the roster of, like, there's going to be some people, and it needs to be in the NFL, that, like, there'll be people who the coach is like, you know, I know you love this guy and I know you drafted this guy, but I really need a player at this position who is more like X and has these kind of skills. So that's got us going and got us thinking. Is there a spot that you think of on this Bears team that might not fit? What's on the roster might not fit Ben Johnson's vision. What comes to your mind when we bring up that idea?
Everything except the quarterback. Yeah, that's kind of a scary question because that's a question that Ryan Poles, I'm sure, had to reckon with in the interview, and we'll have to in this coming offseason, because Ryan Poles believes that he put out a playoff caliber roster last year, especially on offense. He believed that going into the year. And you look at, you know, if you want to pick apart basically any position but quarterback, I think that you can. You could say, if you're Ben Johnson, like, I don't know if DeAndre Swift is the every down back that we need. I don't know if Cole Kmet is enough of a pass catching threat to do what we need. I don't know if DJ Moore is consistent enough or plays the way that we, I mean, Roma Dunze, I think, is a guy that anybody's going to be happy with at that age. But I mean, I would have to think everything but quarterback and right tackle is up for discussion,
man,
with Ben Johnson.
Everything.
I mean,
hopefully not.
I hear you.
It's a team that won five games. So everything should be on the table for the new coach.
Yeah.
This roster's not good. We have gone through months of talking about some of the issues with this roster. And I would add two guys to that list, not on the offense, obviously, but I'd add Jalen and Kyler to that list on the defense.
Of what list?
On the list of things that don't need to be changed.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah, corner and Montez Sweat. Like, I don't, I'm good with Montez Sweat. He just needs somebody else there with him. You can't go Montez Sweat and nobody as your defensive ends.
No, I think that's absolutely true. And when Ben Johnson was asked, or he was talking about the defense last week, he said that they always thought about three players. He thought about Jalen and Kyler Gordon and Andrew Billings. So he didn't mention Montez Sweat, but yeah, I think Montez obviously can play for you. But if you told me it's defensive end at 10, I'm totally fine with that. As long as they get, you know, sign a free agent offensive lineman, get a couple other offensive linemen in the draft, maybe at 39 and 41. But I'm okay with defensive end at 10 if that's where you go.
I'd be fine with that. I would rather see him go offensive tackle. But again, you got to wait and see who they can get in free agency, because that comes before the draft. Lawrence, you mentioned Kyler Gordon. Do you think that Bears fans in general understand how good he is?
No. I think that... I think that there's a whole league of people who are getting. You know what it reminds me of, quite honestly, and I think that Bears fans were ahead of the curve on this. It reminds me of what Charles Tillman was, and for people who were watching week in and week out, they're like, "Oh my God, like this guy is really, really good." And then you don't get him into, you know, a Pro Bowl All Pro conversation until what, 2011, 2012, in that era. I think Kyler Gordon's like that. I think that he's so good, and you watch the, because he's not supposed to be a guy that is able to do what he's supposed to do. He is a hell of a tackler, and he is a not just catching guys. He is willing. He is an attacking player, and you see him do that. You see him be able to handle whether he's on an island or if he has to play the two-way go in the slot. He's so athletic. He's so freaky. He makes so many plays. I think he is a very special player who is just scratching the surface of his potential.
I think so, too, and he's incredibly smart. I think he's about to get a massive contract extension, and everyone's going to be like, okay, I like him, but why is he worth that? And even I would have a hard time answering that question for you because there aren't metrics really that illustrate what he does, but it's one of those things that you know it when you see it.
Yep.
And he is such a timely and effective blitzer. There is no stat, I don't think, that accounts for the big plays that Kyler Gordon prevents by cleaning up other people's mistakes and being ultra reliable. You hear it when you talk to the coaches, and you kind of see it in a way that even like I said, I don't totally understand how to quantify it, but I can tell like that's a guy you want in your starting 11. Not to mention, by the way, you threw it out there kind of casually, like not to mention if you had enough injuries where he had to play outside, the guy is really good outside too.
Think about all of like the screens that get busted up by him, and not like the plays where like a defensive lineman will be like, oh wait, something's wrong here, and then they bust it up. He is full speed. I am about to destroy this. I am going to, that lead blocker that you think you have, I'm going right through him and I'm getting to the ball. I can't say enough nice things about him and how much fun I have watching him game in and game out.
He is the perfect combination of athleticism and intelligence. And he has this attitude, much like what we heard from Caleb Williams in his rookie season, where if you remember, Kyler Gordon spent his rookie season getting toasted pretty good. And he had this attitude about that of, this is all just data. This is all just information that I'm taking in. I'm putting it in my database. When I see this play next time, when I see the way the receiver lines up or does this move or the way the quarterback moves in the pocket, now I know. Next time I see it, now I'm going to recognize it. And he totally has. The guy is, he gets the nickname Spider-Man because of his athleticism, but his brain is like a computer.
You know, a couple more things on the coaching staff. Just 2 points I want you to react to, Jason. One is that I love the recent former players. I guess maybe it's not too recent for Randall L, but JT Barrett, like having young connectivity, I think can help a brainy guy. You know, if you don't want to say nerdy guy, you can. Like Ben. And then the other thing is that these coaching staffs, sometimes it takes a couple years to get everybody that you want. It's like right now it is based on availability and timing. It's a massive factor, and we want to put it all together, but we shouldn't be looking at every hire like this is the guy he's always wanted in that spot, because that guy might not be available right now.
That's totally true, although I would have to think that this staff is a lot more well thought out all around than Matt Eberflus's was in 2022.
it does feel that way. Oh, God. What's interesting at the Senior Bowl for you?
I could make up names and you wouldn't even know.
Go ahead.
You should see this offensive guard out there, Jerome McGillicuddy from McNeese. Oh, man. He's got good hands.
Oh, yeah. He's the black Irish guy, right?
His torso, his thin ankles. The guy runs. He runs like he had Chipotle for lunch. The guy, you should see him. He's fantastic. I think he could slide out to tackle, you know, if you need him to. Hey, I met Matt Bowen at a Starbucks this afternoon. I'd never met.
That must have been big for you.
I was really happy. Yeah.
How'd you know it was Matt Bowen?
Huh?
How'd you know it was Matt Bowen?
Because he had a name tag.
Oh, okay.
But I've been watching Curb Your Enthusiasm, and I like how Larry David feels like unity with fellow balds. And so I felt like Matt Bowen's going to really, you know, like he's going to like me just from the start, just bald to bald, you know. And then we were talking about, you know, how, you know, when you and Dan split up, you know, we all kind of got thrown different ways in the divorce. And Matt stayed with Dan, and I went with Mom to the afternoon show. And yeah, my stepdad's pretty cool, but I miss Dan a little bit.
Whoa. Your stepdad is righteous, and you know it. Don't pretend you don't love your stepdad more than your actual father. It's okay.
And we do get visitation with Bowen, so that's
yes,
good.
Yes. And we unfortunately get visitation with Bernsey.
Every day.
That's unfortunate.
Every day.
For all concerned.
We get that visitation.
Oh, man. I love this. Texture says, is the Declan Doyle-Mike Ditka connection confirmed? No. There was a wild rumor.
He was his, nephew.
Yeah, the Declan Doyle. Oh, my God, this is Mike Ditka's nephew. And people ran with that. And they're still running with it. And it's just, it's very much not true.
Is that like the Michael Jordan, Anthony Edwards thing? Or
no, that's a little bit more lascivious. This is hope trafficking.
Oh, I didn't hear that. Was that like out of wedlock child?
Yeah, that he is, and Anthony Edwards is like, I have a dad. No. Here he is. He's right here. And his dad was like an athlete. He's like, that's my dad right there.
That's the kind of reckless stuff that Tony Gill refers to as, quote, the news.
Yes, and he's hearing it from the streets.
Yeah.
The streets saying...
Really? That sounds like that with that profile, he ought to be the head of content somewhere.
Yep. And he is.
He'll say, well, I'm pretty sure he is because I saw it on the news.
Oh, like, no.
Like, well, what do you mean news? The news, Tony?
Yes.
What's wrong with room temperature?
My wife has taken to telling me, so I was reading this article the other day, and I know she means she saw it on TikTok. That's what I know that means. I was reading an article. It's just, I'm letting her get away with it because she needs that.
Yeah, sometimes okay. You have to ask people about sourcing, and it's a very important thing of where did that come from? Do you trust that author? Do you trust that publication? Was this said, did someone say allegedly or reportedly when they were talking about it?
Right.
All of that stuff.
Sure.
Context matters.
Was it tweeted by something called NFL notifications, you know?
We teach this stuff to our kids, but I'm worried about how many people aren't teaching this to their kids that, like, hey, you need to pay attention to where information comes from. I have friends. I mean, I'm 40. And I have friends my age.
You're a man.
I'm a man. Come after me. I'm 40. I have friends my age where it's like I'll read something. I'll see something on social media or on a thing like The Onion or something like that that's parody. And it's very entertaining to me. And I'm like, I have friends I can't send this to because I don't know if they know that it's not real.
Did you guys happen to see the piece on CBS Sunday Morning a few months back about Finland and the way they teach media literacy to kids?
I have it bookmarked.
It's incredible. And you wish this was happening in America. It's amazing.
In some places it is.
It is?
What's the short of it? What's the summary of it?
It's the curriculum for, you know, basically 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds, middle schoolers to teach them media literacy aimed at safeguarding the truth, safeguarding a precious resource. They deem it a precious resource in Finland, the truth.
There are a lot of J schools who are trying to do that with students. And I know that one of the things, the first thing that I usually do is explain to them the limitations of the First Amendment, living in a world where people think it protects them from consequences. And it does, as it pertains to the federal government, but not from someone jumping onto your Facebook page and telling you that you're an idiot.
And it's tough for them, man.
And that concept is hard for people to grasp.
Yeah.
It's hard for people that age to grasp. I'm not scolding them. I'm not trying to sound like an old man here. It's hard for them. I empathize. Because we all, the three of us talking right now, we all grew up before this. That, correct. But these kids grew up in it. They don't know any different. We had a different world before this. And then as this comes, we kind of watch it with this wary eye.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys, this is all they know if you're a certain age.
That's why it's in a middle school curriculum in Finland.
It should be.
And that's where,
even before that would make sense to me. Yeah,
that's where it ought to be in America. Thank you, Jason Leisure. You're the best. Have fun down there. You talk to that Jerome McGillicuddy. We want an in-person report
for
next
time. No, we don't. We really don't.
I'm keeping an eye on Jimothy Henderson, too. He's a wide receiver from Toledo. A lot of NFL people I've talked to have him as a slot guy. I think he can play outside, too.
Jimothy's great. I'm sure Ryan Poles will draft him in the third round. Bye, Jason.
I'm a man.
See you guys.
I'm 40.
He is.
I'm not a little kid. That's right. Mm-hmm. He is all of those things. You want to talk a little bit about yesterday?
Yeah, it was quite something, wasn't it? It really got me ready for a season that is well underway.
Okay, good. Well, the trade deadline's in a week, so that's perfect time for you to get involved. It's next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Charles Tilghman. Charles, thanks for being on the show.
Y'all ready for me to go?
No, not.
You can't take no calls or nothing?
Well, if you want to hang on for a minute, we'll take a break and we'll come back and take some calls.
Is it a media minute or is it like a black person minute?
It's a black person minute because a black person drives this show.
Afternoons on The Score.
Man, that's a hell of a win, guys. That's a good football team that we just beat. Okay, 16 regular season wins in a row. Okay, that was a good team. And look, hey, sometimes you just gotta pop out and show them.
Sometimes you gotta pop out and show them.
Dennis Allen getting his Kendrick Lamar on. I think if they get the right personnel, there might need to be a couple of tweaks. Dennis Allen likes to go after people.
Oh, hell yeah, he does.
I think that the Bears fans are going to enjoy that in a way that they haven't really had since. And Vic played a lot of coverage too, actually. But this is what you're getting. You're getting a guy who believes in the aggressive nature of defense. Defense in setting the tone by how they get after the quarterback.
Let's get right to that part of it. There's something fun about Dennis Allen I want to get to. But he talks about how this is a quarterback-driven league. Because to your point, Lawrence, he knows that it's a quarterback-driven league, and he knows how to confuse quarterbacks. He's very, very good at it.
Yeah, he's been one of the best to throw stuff at these quarterbacks, and figuring that stuff out is important. And I think it's going to be a little bit of a change for what the Bears fans are used to seeing. And honestly, I think it's going to play into Bears fans' egos.
Yeah, for sure. Because you know that thing that like Brian Flores does where he throws all the people at the line and then you don't know who's coming from where?
Mm-hmm.
That thing, and he confuses. Dennis Allen's real good at that. He talked about being in a quarterback-driven league.
That all remains to be seen. You know, we'll get all the guys in here and we'll figure out what we need to do. But I think, you know, Ben in his press conference made a great point that this has become a quarterback-driven league. I mean, that's what this league is. And so I think everything that we do is going to be based on how do we affect the quarterback. And you affect the quarterback through rush and coverage. And that's the pinnacle of what team defense is all about. And so we can be as great as we want to be covering everybody. But if we can't rush the passer, it's not gonna matter, and vice versa. If we can get to the passer quickly, but we can't, you know, disrupt routes and be competitive on the line of scrimmage, then we're gonna give up completions. So I think those two things have to be able to work together.
I thought of you, Lawrence, as we listened to Dennis Allen multiple times. Reporters asked him to name check players, tried to bait him into name checking a defensive player or two or four that he liked, and he really only let it fly with one.
Hmm. Yeah, look, I think you know, when I came in here and I looked at the board and I really saw who we had, and you get a chance to see what the measurables are. Like, I think there's a lot of things that I like. We've got some size and length at the corner position. I like the fact that they have some man coverage ability. You know, I think we've got some versatility at the safety position. And so I see the fit. I think, you know, Kyler Gordon, I think, is an outstanding, you know, nickel player. So I have a vision for how, you know, we can utilize him. And so I think the foundation for what we want to do is there. And then I'm just excited about finally getting these guys in here and us having an opportunity to work with them and seeing exactly what we have. And then we've got to be creative on how we want
to
use them.
It read to me like he didn't even want to say anybody's name, but he couldn't help himself.
When you look at the tape, it's hard to not get excited about all the different things that you might be able to do with Kyler Gordon. It's going to be fascinating to see how they use him because he's got all the things. He can cover, he can blitz, he can tackle. And if you're asking someone to be a flexible piece inside of a defense like they are often asked him to do, he needs to be able to do all three of those things.
It's a D coordinator's dream to have a tool like that, something you could use in so many different ways.
Yep.
He got very excited about it.
This is not an apples to apples comparison because they're slightly different positions. Kyler Gordon, to me, can have an impact on a defense like Tyrann Mathieu can. Like, you can line him up kind of wherever you want, and you can disguise him to do kind of whatever you want. Like, early honey badger in the league, like, that's kind of what, to me, Kyler looks like out there.
That's a pretty interesting comp. And then I liked this, and I wanted Bears fans to imagine Dennis Allen post-firing, hanging out with the family.
Where were you for the last 6 or 8 weeks of the season? Did you go to home base? Did you go on vacation? What did you do to kind of reset yourself?
Well, home base was still in New Orleans, but I spent a lot of time with my family. We did, you know, we took a couple of vacations. I got away from football a little bit. I'm not going to forget football in a couple of months. It's going to be there when I get back, you know. So I just really wanted to take the time to do some things that you don't really get an opportunity to do a lot in our profession, and hanging out with family on Thanksgiving and Christmas and taking a couple of vacations. So I did that.
So I'm imagining Dennis Allen watching the Bears and the Lions on Thanksgiving. And I wanted so badly to be on the media Zoom today so I could go. Because Dennis Allen said today that he was basically going to be Ben Johnson's defensive coordinator wherever Ben went. And that Ben picked the Bears. He's like, all right, I guess we're going to Chicago. That's good. So on Thanksgiving, did he allow himself a moment to think, I might find out tomorrow?
Right.
Oh, no. Oh, this is
game. No. What are you doing, Wagner?
He's like, oh, that job's going to open up.
Yep.
Any second here.
Ben will probably want that job.
And I know that I'm going with Ben.
My old teammate Dan Campbell will help me out in that regard.
Yes, he will.
And I'll be right there with him.
It's like, oh, can you believe that? That guy's an idiot. Oh, my God. That coach is awful. He's going to get fired. Maybe Ben should take that. Maybe he is going to. Honey. Start checking out some Chicago stuff.
Have you ever been to Evanston? So that is Dennis Allen, your defensive coordinator. We got to hear from both coordinators today, which is good news. When we come back, we're going to do a little bit of baseball. If you're someone who enjoys when the Spiegel and Holmes show does a block of baseball, guess what? We got you for about a half an hour or so. There's a couple things we want to talk about good with both teams. We'll do that next on The Score.
Kevin Fishbane.
I got Fishy Business, K. Fishbane.
Fishy Business?
Fishy Business, what I call him whenever I have him on the show, Fishy Business.
Bears beat writer for The Athletic.
Obviously, sports radio of the year in the state of Illinois. You don't get that by accident. He does a wonderful job for those guys.
I'm not leaving to cover the Detroit Lions.
Kevin Fishbane talking Bears.
Hey, Kevin. Kevin Fishbane from The Athletic.
I love your name.
It's a great name.
Yeah, great name.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Kevin Fishbane just got back from Mobile from the Senior Bowl, so let's get a firsthand report on the level of talent and who the Bears may be stalking. Kevin Fishbane joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. He's on Twitter at KFishbane and with us on Twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. How was it, Kev?
It was good, Dan. I think it was probably a good Senior Bowl for the Bears because offensive line and defensive line were two of the stronger positions. When you look at guys with first or second round grades, those were the kind of two positions that had a lot of guys that fit that category. Because, you know, look, you're not going to get the top 5-10 players there, although the Bears did get Darnell Wright at number 10. He was in the Senior Bowl a couple of years ago. So, you know, for Ryan Poles and Ian Cunningham, Trey Koziel, Jeff King, they were all at practice on Wednesday. Scouts were there most of the week, but I only saw Poles and Cunningham on Wednesday. You know, this is a good group of guys in the trenches to look at. And when you see those two second-round picks and you think about maybe some flexibility at number 10, you could see how the Bears could come out of the, you know, first two rounds of the draft with at least a starter, if not on one side, on both sides of the line.
That's all positive news given where they are in terms of constructing their roster. They're also busy constructing that coaching staff. Is that why Ben Johnson wasn't in Mobile? Because he's working on that staff? Or is this more of a he'll show up when they get back, present him things, and then they'll go over everything together, and then of course he can go to the pro days and whatever else?
Yeah, Marshall, I expect that's probably the case, that he wants to do some of these coaching interviews in person, and figured it was probably more efficient for him to be at House Hall, getting his staff finalized, trusting Bowles and that scouting staff. And I talked to you guys last week, you know, one of the benefits of not making a change at GM is the Bears personnel side, you know, they don't need any hand-holding. Like, they have their process, they have their grading system. You know, I'm sure there were some extensive talks with Ben Johnson about certain things he's looking for before they went down to Mobile, so they're all kind of on the same page. But he's probably allowed to let them go do that. And we don't. I'm not sure yet about like what Ben Johnson, the scout, is like. You know, in terms of what he, you know, I don't know. Like, will we? I assume we'll see him at some pro days. Usually, do see coaches there. You know, as I mentioned before, you know, like Eberflus was a big college guy. You know, he loved that element of it. Some coaches love it. Other coaches, you know, it's not necessarily. They kind of leave that to the GM. So we'll continue to learn kind of what Ben Johnson's role is. But I think timing wise, it probably made more sense for him to keep hammering out that staff at Hallis.
Did you observe anything notable about how the Bears were moving around? Were they in one large group? Were they scattered to the winds to go look at various positions? I'm just wondering what we can learn about how they're doing business now based on what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, for the first practice on Wednesday, Poles and Cunningham were on the grass. They were right there getting a pretty up-close look at the guys. Trey Koziel, Jeff King were also down there. And it reminded me of a couple years ago. What, you know, because we were so focused. It's the Bears. We're almost always focused on the offensive line with this team. And I do remember specifically like watching Ryan Poles have a front row seat to some of those one-on-one drills. And it was a similar situation on Wednesday. And then, you know, the whole group of Bears scouts was sitting together in the bleachers for the second practice. And Poles and Cunningham joined them for that. So, you know, I think for it's an interesting part of the draft calendar because it's really the first big event. And you can find yourself being a little bit of the prisoner of the moment because, you know, you're going to hear about guys whose stock went up or stock went down. And certainly, like, recency bias comes into play. And, you know, I had a Senior Bowl Bears mock draft that went up yesterday. And that's really based on, you know, catching as many reps as I could in 2 days when this is just one piece of the puzzle. So, but what I do think that what Ryan Poles likes about these events, similar to the pro days, is you get that up close view and you get to be on the field, watch these guys, watch their movements, get a look at their physiques, and see them in the Senior Bowl, see them against the best of the best. And there are a couple small school guys, like you always hear the Senior Bowl week, like which small school guys prove themselves against some of the, you know, FBS players, because this is their opportunity to do so. And you'll hear a lot about those guys, and you know, this week and how it helps the draft stock.
What is the buzz on guys who really made an impression? I mean, I know it's beyond early when we're talking about getting ready for the NFL draft, but this is one of the first, I guess, metrics, markers in terms of data and what we're gathering from these players who are going to be in the draft. So what did you come away learning, and who made an impression?
Well, if you're looking at from the Bears lens, Marshall, at that number 10 pick, I don't think there's a guy here who could go 10, but the two guys who were in play for that would be Texas A&M edge rusher Shamar Stewart and Marshall edge rusher Mike Green. And they were probably two of the best players there.
Mike Green's highlights. If you go and watch his highlights, there's some unbelievable stuff.
It's really, I mean, and he's got the length and the power and the speed. And I had that fortuitous moment where I turned my camera on to just to film one Mike Green rep. And he just ran over the offensive lineman in front of him. So, and Stewart is an incredibly vocal guy. Like, you could hear him during his reps and winning his reps. And you could see the power that he has. So, you know, I can't imagine those guys did anything other than help themselves. Now, does that mean they're in play at 10? I'm not sure. But, you know, if the Bears trade back, things like that. And then on the offensive line, I'm going to I did a poor job with my mock draft because I picked only guys whose names I cannot pronounce and don't know the pronunciations for them. But I will say the one of the guys that got a ton of chatter throughout the week, and you can see how well he played and should be on the Bears' radar, is Gray Zabel, mm-hmm. or Zabel from North Dakota State.
Yep.
And he's one of those guys that just you look at him and you're like, yep, you're an offensive lineman. And they moved him to center. They want to see what he could do there. And his core strength, like when he took on these bull rushes, he stood his ground. I mean, guys were not getting past him. It was really impressive. The footwork, all the things that you need to do to protect the quarterback, he showed it in those one-on-one drills. So he was, you know, to go back to that point about an FCS guy using this week to prove himself against the best of the best, he absolutely did. So there were a bunch of offensive linemen in Belton from NC State. Ariante Ursary from Minnesota, I thought had a really good week. So again, like the Bears should be able to find plenty of guys that they liked out of Mobile that they could move around their draft board, especially in that second round. I watched the wide receivers a little bit because I'm very curious what to see what the Bears do at receiver. Jalen Noel to Iowa State was the guy that caught my eye the most. Really smooth, had great body control on some plays down the sideline. And if Keenan Allen's not coming back, I'm curious what the strategy is going to be at wide receiver. And I could absolutely see that being a draft priority for them to get a number three receiver from the draft.
How surprised would you be if Keenan Allen did indeed find his way back to House Hall? Because I'd be shocked.
I would.
Yeah, I would be pretty surprised. He had his moments this year, but I think when, you know, he didn't get to choose to be traded to the Bears. And this is really going to be kind of the first time in his long career that he gets to take charge of this and be this free agent and find the what would be for him a more perfect place. So yeah, it would be surprising if he's back, especially considering the salary that he would probably command. The Bears have the cap space if they wanted to, but I could see them going younger at that spot.
We talked a little bit about Trey Smith earlier in the show and whether or not $20 million is what you want to spend on an interior lineman. I'm just curious as to your thoughts, given how the salary caps make up, the fact that only four guards in football as of last year made $20 million per.
Well, my general thought on salary cap stuff is it's not my money, so I don't care.
That's fair. I have the same general attitude, just to be clear, Kevin. Yeah, I'm with you
on that. I also always use the Arrested Development line. There's always money in the banana stand. You don't want to, quote unquote, overpay. You don't want to get into a situation where, you know, like what the Bears had, you know, when Ryan Poles first took over, where you had all these bad contracts and players who were just too old and making too much money. But Trey Smith seems like the type of guy you go ahead and you, quote unquote, overpay for. I mean, he's that good. I'll have a story out Monday. You know, it's kind of some of the other stuff I was hearing at Senior Bowl, and it does certain, like, there is buzz around, and it could be just guys connecting the dots more so than actually having, you know, intimate knowledge, but there's this kind of sense of, yeah, that people expect the Bears to be a player for Trey Smith. And when you look at the way that Caleb Williams plays, like Caleb Williams, as good as he is outside the pocket, he likes to stay in the pocket. Like he wants to be able to go sit there and go one, two, three, boom, and make his throw. And if you can protect that heart of the pocket with a guy at guard like Trey Smith, who's missed only one game in his career. And if anybody hasn't read Dan Pompey's profile that went up at The Athletic last week of Trey Smith, it's a must read. It's a phenomenal story. You don't hear very many negatives about him. So the tackle versus guard thing is not as clear distinction as it used to be from a salary cap perspective and from a what they do for your team, because so many teams want to protect that spot. And you hear coaches all the time talk about the guys that are closest to the ball, the guys that we're worried about. So I would applaud it if the Bears went ahead and got a guy like that who doesn't have a whole lot of red flags and has blocked for a really good team and done so at a high level.
I'm sure you were following from afar when the coordinators were unveiled and got to take questions for the first time. Maybe you were lurking on Zoom while you were watching everywhere else. What were your takeaways? What mattered from the first things we've heard, especially from the two new guys?
Yeah, I know a lot of people are talking about that Dennis Allen had been part of Ben Johnson's staff on his radar. And I think that should speak to the quality of that Ben Johnson, or kind of the, I'll use the word, the aura around Ben Johnson, that here's a coach in Dennis Allen who had never worked with Ben Johnson before, didn't seem to like know him very well, and should have, you know, probably expected to have his choice of defensive coordinator opportunities, that he wanted to work with Ben Johnson. I think that's important. I think that matters. And then you were kind of listening to Declan Doyle. I mean, I said this to somebody yesterday. That was probably his first ever press conference. I can't imagine he's ever done a whole lot of talking to the media. He's 28. He was a tight ends coach the last 2 years. But I'll tell you what about both those guys is there are a few assistant coaches in Mobile from the Saints staff and the Broncos staff. And it was really kind of funny talking to them about Declan Doyle, because they all had the same reaction, which was, I cannot believe that this guy is only 28, because he just comes into a room and
well, because like, he sounds like he's 12.
Well, yeah, I talked to a coach who said that Doyle did a presentation when this coach was at Tulane like 4 or 5 years ago. And he's sitting there watching his presentation like, wow, this is really interesting, learning about, you know, game preparation and some of the things that teams should be doing to plan, you know, Monday through Saturday, get ready for Sunday. And he's like, wow, this guy must have been coaching for a long time. And then he walks out of there and he's like, oh, he's not even 25 years old. So there is certainly some respect from some of those coaches who have been around him to also talk to coaches who have been with Dennis Allen. And one note that I found interesting was the linebacker position. You know, because there was obviously understandable maybe consternation about the Bears pouring so many resources into that spot with Tremaine Edmonds and TJ Edwards. Like, you still have those two guys. How are they going to look in Dennis Allen's on his roster, in his scheme? And one of his, you know, former assistants in New Orleans, like, just turn on the tape of DeMario Davis. Just watch DeMario Davis, all-pro guy, makes a ton of plays. And you can see that that Dennis Allen should be able to put those guys in good position to make some plays.
With Dennis Allen, that seemed to be the number one hire all along. And we learned that when, as you said, he talked about how long he'd been in contact with Ben Johnson. With Richard Hightower, there was question of whether or not he should be retained, maybe looking for a fresh start. How did you see the retention of Richard Hightower as opposed to going out and getting someone new to be the special teams coach?
Yeah, well, what we don't know and won't really know, Marshall, is how close the Darren Rizzi thing was. You know, mm-hmm. That was the name that came up right away. Rizzi, an incredibly accomplished special teams coordinator, known around the league for his game management abilities. But I think there's a massive benefit of keeping Richard Hightower because, for one, like, he knows the building. He can help with certain things as Ben Johnson gets going. He works with, you know, the youngest players on the team, you know, with that special teams group. So he works with a lot of guys who probably had a bit of heads were spinning last year through all the tumult that the Bears had. And Richard Hightower's overseen that. That group was fifth in the league, special teams DVOA last year. And obviously, when you think about Bears special teams, the first play that probably comes to mind is the block kick. And we could have conversations about Cairo Santos and, you know, what the plan is at kicker, if they need a bigger leg, all those things. But the fact of the matter is that Cairo generally had a pretty good season. The coverage teams were pretty good. They had the return touchdown against Green Bay. DeAndre Carter got some, you know, a couple all-pro votes. And Torrey Taylor had a phenomenal season. So I think that if you're able to have that stability, have that continuity with Hightower, it just seems to make sense to me to not, if you don't have to overhaul it all the way, if you could have a guy that as I said earlier, that the young players have a relationship with, I think it makes things a lot easier for Ben Johnson.
Kevin Fishbane, outstanding as always. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right. Take care, guys.